Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's time for our weekly look at what our liberal friends are talking about this week. He's the former Obama ambassador to Belgium and co-star of Politics and Pints. It's As I See It with Howard Gutman on News Radio WRVA.
Good morning. Welcome to the Thanksgiving episode of As I See It. Now, as we all know, Thanksgiving is the time of year for the greatest sport in the world. And of course, that sport would be politics. And we have plenty to talk about. We will talk about Donald Trump. And the titillating question of the week is going to be, when are you going to get mad at Donald Trump? We're going to talk about Joe Biden and what the transition looks like. And at the bottom of the hour, we have our guest as usual. As you know, we alternate Democrats and Republicans. This is our Republican week. I do have a Republican, but he was a never Trumper. It's former Congressman Tom Coleman. And then we're going to discuss the social policy that may be the best social policy I have ever heard. And it will likely infuriate you. So do me a favor. It's the favor I ask all the time. If you're a WRVA listener, if you love Jeff Katz and John Reed, my dear buddies, and they are the, for the people who don't know, they are the morning and afternoon drive time talk show hosts on WRVA, tending to be conservative radio station. And if you are a WRVA listener, please call your friends, Mabel and Harry, and say, it's that hour with that liberal, that Democrat guy, that Gutman guy, and he's going to ask if we're mad at Donald Trump and it's got some interesting stuff going on. And if you are a radio.com listener and you want to hear just a little bit more on sides sometimes you hear from, we call it straight here on As I See It. And so call your Mabel and Harry and tell them to pick up as well. And so the titillating question, when will you be mad at Donald Trump? When will you get mad at Donald Trump? I have always tried to be straight with you. I told you I'm not going to just go for the spin on the left. I'm not going to just go for the spin on the right. And I told you 4 weeks ago that Donald Trump had lost the election, that he knew he had lost the election, and he was now going to keep up a fight that threatened the core of our democracy for two reasons. For his re-election in 2024, and for his personal financial gain getting to that point and freezing out other Republicans. And that might be well and good, but he's playing with someone that pisses me off. He's playing with you, the WRVA listeners. Because although he knows he lost, he knows what's actually happened. He knows he's just fundraising for the future. You don't sometimes. So I look at the Facebook feed of Jeff Katz, and I look at people I recognize from Politics and Pints in our audience, and they say, I don't care whatever happens, I will never believe this election was anything but a fraud. And they are good people. They deserve to believe in our democracy, not that the 2020 election got stolen. But they don't believe it because Donald Trump has lied to them again. And when you realize it, you'll then say, oh my gosh, that's one too far. I didn't mind if you lied to us about you paying off strippers or you paying off porn show stars or why you said something or that you didn't say it or you did have a call with the Ukraine president or you didn't. I didn't mind that. But I believe in you and I believe in my democracy. And when you lie to me about that, then you're playing with something that is too precious. And so that's the question. Well, how do we know what's going on? First of all, let's look. Donald Trump has now told you he will accept the election. He's going to leave. Do you believe for 1 second that if there was actually a fraud, if someone had stolen this election from Donald Trump, he would just give up? The Republican Party would give up? A party that has the majority in the Senate would give up? If we actually had a fraud, ladies and gentlemen, I would be out there fighting for Donald Trump's right to be elected president. He's just played golf. You have been posting angrily on Facebook pages that your faith in our democracy has been toppled while he has played golf. Tell him, for gosh sake, let you go play golf and he worry about the democracy. We know it the minute he set up the fundraising to fight the improper election. There are ways to set up the fundraising to make sure funds go to the lawyers and the law firms and the legal briefs and what's involved in the challenge, but not these funds. The Donald Trump fund to fight the election was set up for debt repayment first. The first dollars in went to repay the Trump campaign debt. Then a portion went to the RNC, the Republican National Committee. And Donald Trump is fighting to keep Rona McDaniel as the head of the Republican National Committee so that he has control of the committee going forward for 2024. And then last, the funds go to Save America. What the heck is Save America? It's a new Donald Trump PAC that will support his lifestyle as he travels around the country over the next 4 years until he declares for president. It can pay for him to fly, to stay in hotels. Guess which hotels he'll stay at? Guess what he'll fly on? It will pay himself to campaign for the next years. How do we know it was just a fraud? The people who were deciding what happened here were in most cases Trump appointees or Republican governors. There was a recent decision in one of the cases with a judge who was recently appointed by Donald Trump. And he wrote at the end, finding that there was no impropriety, quote, voters, not lawyers, choose the president. Ballots, not briefs, decide elections. The Republican states have decided there was no problem. The recounts, the friggin' recount in Milwaukee, paid for by Donald Trump, added votes to Joe Biden, 132 votes. That's what a recount normally does. Donald Trump lost Wisconsin by 21,000 votes. That's okay. It's okay to fight if you believe that there's a real recount. That's your right. It's okay to go to court. But you have to have something more than Rudy Giuliani running shows for you to fundraise. And who is the victim? Not Joe Biden. Not Howard Gutman. It's Nikki Haley. It's Mike Pence. We found out today who else is the victim because they've basically announced for president. But here's what we know. It's working. The polls done now as to who is favored for president in 2024 in the Republican nomination have, number one, Donald Trump with 53% of the vote. In second place, yes, Mike Pence with 12% of the vote. And in third place with 8% of the vote, is it Nikki Haley? No. Mike Pompeo, perhaps? No. Tom Cotton? Josh Hawley? Little Marco Rubio, as Donald Trump calls him, are they the 8%ers? No. Donald Trump Jr. And so the Republican Party is getting kidnapped by Donald Trump with funds raised to fight an election that he knew he was properly done, close and disappointing, but nothing to fight, for the next 4 years to the disadvantage of the rest of the Republican Party, except for this. Rejoice if you like. The most formidable candidate in this commentator's mind, at least, the person who has a very good chance of winning in 2024 is Donald Trump. I don't think Joe Biden will run for re-election in 2024. I think Joe Biden, it's not that he couldn't. He'll be 82 years old. I wish him with all my heart the best of health. I think even if he has the stamina, which I think he probably will, and even if he has done well, which I think he probably will, Joe Biden will have nothing left to prove. He will have properly capped a career well run. And frankly, I think he would prefer to spend their time with his grandchildren in Rehoboth, reflecting on a life well, a political career well lived, 40-something years in the Senate, vice president, president. Who the heck would need the second term? And that would likely leave Kamala, who's a very talented vice president. But I'm not sure in this America that anybody but Joe Biden could have beaten Donald Trump this time, given how close it was. I don't think there was anybody else who could have beaten Donald Trump, including Kamala, including Pete Buttigieg, including Amy Klobuchar. So I'm not sure in 4 years that Kamala would be able to beat Donald Trump. So he's stealing the Republican Party. We're going to talk about that more in about 3 minutes, because we've had the Republican senators who are going to run against Haley and Pence and Pompeo declare themselves. They did that in attacking the Biden cabinet that's been named so far. It's a fabulous story. We'll be back in 3 minutes. You're listening to As I See It on News Radio WRVA 1140 AM, 96.1 FM. I'm Howard Gutman.
This is As I See It on News Radio WRVA. We now rejoin former U.S. Ambassador Howard Gutman.
Thank you and welcome back. And thank you to Jordan Bondren for that intro. Jordan is the very loyal producer who wakes up early in the morning to do the Gut Check, which is my son's show on 910 The Fan from 8 to 10, and then stays with me from 10 to 11. Thanks so much, Jordan, although he had way too much pleasure in saying in the opening that I am the lib. I view myself as an American first and a Democrat second. But welcome back. Let's go back and cover a couple of things. Oh, and please tweet me, follow me at the Howard Gutman. That's THEHOWARDGUTMAN. If you tweet me during the week with questions, I promise I will get to them on the show, and maybe we'll even start opening up for questions and answers. A couple of issues that we left untouched. First, I told you that there was the President Trump Fight Fund. There were other fight funds that have been set up by Republican groups. It was incumbent on the Trump campaign to administer them, to stop them, to make sure they're honest. People are beginning to get the understanding of what this is about. So there, for example, is a contributor named Fred Eshelman, who just filed a lawsuit to get repaid the $2.5 million that he donated to fight because he was told this election would be reversed. He was told there was fraud. And now he's finding out there was nothing except a $2.5 million fundraising effort that took his money. Let's turn back to the issue that the current polls show Donald Trump with 53%, Mike Pence with 12%, Donald Trump Jr. with 8% for 2024. Now, don't I know, you might say, that that's, of course, early polls. We just had the 2020 election. That's based on name recognition. And of course, that is the conventional wisdom that the early polls don't count because they're just based on name recognition. But in these day and age where the names get out there, where social media exists, where we're talking about stars being involved, the early polls tend to be actually correct. Let's take 2016. Hillary Clinton was leading all the way and never was challenged. 2020, Joe Biden was leading all the way and never was seriously challenged. If you had like the Republican field in 2016, you could have a surprise. Whoever's leading, you know, of nobody getting more than 15 or 20% of the vote, that doesn't matter. But when 53% already support Donald Trump, that matters. And it matters basically to the people who were hoping and counting that he would be gone and they would get their party back. Now, we knew some of them. We've been talking about Nikki Haley and Mike Pence and Mike Pompeo. But there were others. There are others. There are the Republican senators who said, I can't wait till 2024 to finally get my turn at bat. If you'll remember the 2016 election, there were people established in the party who thought they would go to the head of the line. There was Jeb Bush, and he cratered. But then there was Marco Rubio. I think Senator Rubio is a very smart senator and a really good politician. But he was playing hard for 2016. And then there was Ted Cruz, another savvy politician and smart official. And they thought the road might lead for them. And then Donald Trump blindsided them. And if you remember, Donald Trump calling Marco Rubio little Marco. And nobody, including Senator Marco Rubio, knew how to deal with that. They were blown away. But now it looked they've been preparing for 2024 with Haley, Pence, and Pompeo. So who is now running? They declared themselves yesterday. They are the three people who most bitterly attacked the initially named Biden cabinet members. Now, it's a bit of a difficult feat to start attacking these initially named Biden cabinet members. If we get more time this week or next week, we will go over them in detail. But the truth be told, by and large, they are the best educated and most experienced people in their field that we have. Truth be told, they are the best educated and most experienced people in their field that we have. That's why they were so easy to name up front. Joe Biden's known about them for a long time. And so what the heck are you gonna do when he's naming not Green New Deal people, not people from the squad, not Bernie Sanders to be head of defense, not Elizabeth Warren at Treasury, but he's named the kind of people we will take a quick look at. What do you do if the President of the United States has named the best educated, most experienced leaders that we have in those particular fields? Well, you got to do something if you want to run for president and you want to take the lead of the party. And so although these people will get confirmed because they should get confirmed, these people will get confirmed because they are the smartest and most experienced people in the world. The people who are hoping to run for president, they've got to stick to the party line. They've got to oppose Biden's choices. And so Marco Rubio did perhaps the funniest thing I've seen in politics, but you probably have a right to get mad if you're like me, someone who would hope for fair calls of balls and strikes. But if you're a Republican leader, Marco Rubio was brilliant. Faced with this group that we'll talk about briefly or next week, Marco Rubio said, the Washington Post reads, that Marco Rubio came out with a series of tweets, as did Tom Cotton, who's the senator from Arkansas and planning to run for president, and Josh Hawley, the recently elected senator from Missouri, who's also going to put his toe in the water. So the three of them, Hawley, Cotton, and Rubio, started unleashing the tweets to go after Biden's initial picks. And the Washington Post wrote, quote, the common thread of their tweets, a populist-like resistance to the educated, steeped in government expertise that Biden wants to shape his government with. And here's the quote, the tweet from Rubio. Biden's cabinet picks went to Ivy League schools, have strong resumes, attend all the right conferences, and will be polite and orderly caretakers of America's decline. Let's try that again. Biden's cabinet picks went to Ivy League schools, have strong resumes, attend all the right conferences, and will be polite and orderly caretakers of America's decline. Marco Rubio, a brilliant politician, said, oh, well, maybe people like Tony Blinken are really smart and have been around a really long time and have had the toughest jobs in the State Department other than that Secretary of State himself. So he's the perfect person if you wanted the most qualified person to run our State Department. So here's what I'm going to do for your populace. Here's what I'm going to do for all you. I'm going to attack him as being an Ivy League, well-experienced, well-educated, career, smart government official who's come in and out with different politicians but is as experienced we have. I'll attack him as leading a polite and orderly caretakers of America's decline. When you got nothing, go with it. That's the theory there. Now, look, I don't think everybody needs to go to Harvard and Yale and Columbia. In fact, they may not be the best people to have as your best friends. They may not be the best people to watch a movie with, to talk about what bothers you with your children. But it's pretty good if you're going to deal with a fight between Azerbaijan and Armenia, that you know where Azerbaijan and Armenia are, that you've met their leaders, that you understand how far back their conflict goes, that you follow daily the outbreak of fighting that's occurred now. It's pretty good that you have that kind of experience. But Marco Rubio came out and decided he was going to attack that for the populist roots. Now, here's the funny part of it. Because Tom Cotton and Josh Hawley also came out and attacked the same elite cabinet. The problem is, Tom Cotton graduated from Harvard College, then Harvard Law School, then he went to Gibson Dunn, one of the largest law firms, and he spent time at McKinsey, the largest consulting firm. His resume looks kind of like mine, but even better. I have Columbia and Harvard Law School and a big firm. It looks a lot like Ron Klain's resume. Ron was Harvard Law School, and then he clerked for Byron White on the Supreme Court, and he joined O'Melveny and Myers, which in legal terms was Gibson Dunn, where Cotton's there was their biggest rival. This is the elite Ivy League law world. That's Tom Cotton. So what about Josh Hawley? Maybe he was different. Well, he went to a little place called Stanford and Yale Law School. And Stanford and Yale Law School, that's a little bit like one of those other elitists that are being attacked. Not Tony Blinken, but Jake Sullivan. Jake Sullivan was appointed as our national security advisor. Jake, I believe, went to school in Minnesota, and then he went to Yale, and he was a professor at Yale. And so some of the people who want to lead the populist parade have anything but populism in their backgrounds. And frankly, I am pretty delighted that we have, as the president's closest advisors, Ron Klain. As I said, Ron went to Harvard Law School. I think he went to Harvard undergrad, but Ron didn't just go to Harvard Law School. I went to Harvard Law School as well, and I graduated magna at the top 7%. Ron was the Sears Prize winner. That makes you the number one in the class. There is candle power there. He has worked on the U.S. Supreme Court. He worked at the White House helping to pick judges, including Ruth Bader Ginsburg. He was Al Gore's chief of staff when Gore was vice president. And he has been a staffer for chief of staff for Vice President Biden. So who could be more qualified to be chief of staff at the White House? Tony Blinken has been in two administrations over two decades. He is our new Secretary of State. He served on the National Security Council staff at the White House for 7 years. He was a special assistant to the president for strategic planning. He has worked for the Senate Foreign Relations Committee as staff director. He's been a senior fellow, I think, at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, CSIS, one of the best think tanks there has been. He has been Biden's foreign policy advisor for decades. And he was the Deputy Secretary of State. And Tony was the Deputy Secretary of State when I was U.S. Ambassador to Belgium. And I can tell you, he was amazing in his position. So what more quality could there be? Let's compare that to what happened with the Trump point. In the Trump point, Donald Trump had to meet Rex Tillerson for his first time and make him Secretary of State. We've got a guest on the in 3 minutes, former 17-year Republican Congressman Tom Coleman and my friend Tom Coleman. You're listening to As I See It on News Radio WRVA 1140 AM and 96.1 FM. I'm Howard Gutman.
You're listening to As I See It on News Radio WRVA. Here's former U.S. Ambassador Howard Gutman.
Thanks, Jordan, and welcome back. As you know, it's the bottom of the hour. It's time for our guest of the week. And as you know, we try to alternate Democrats with Republicans. We've had Senator Mark Warner and Don Beyer and Terry McAuliffe and some of the leading Republican strategists, Brian Ballard and Ed Rogers. And today we have a former 17-year congressman from Missouri and a good friend of mine, Tom Coleman. Tom, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Howard. Thank you for the invitations. And I'm looking forward to a nice conversation this morning.
Now, Tom, although you were a 17-year Republican, Donald Trump had a lot of effect on the Republican Party into dividing it. There were people, never Trumpers and Lincoln Republicans, who never warmed up to him. There were some never Trumpers like Lindsey Graham, who seemed to switch to an always Trumper. And there were some people brought into the party who were always supporting Donald Trump. Can you tell us where you were in that world and why?
Yeah, well, thank you. I guess you could call me a never Trumper because I could see early on, even during the campaign of 2016, that Mr. Trump was not fit to be president. And as I say, he's confirmed that every day of his presidency, as far as I'm concerned. He didn't have the talents, the experience, the knowledge, the character, all the things that we believe we should have in a president. And he showed that fairly early often. So from that standpoint, he actually, in the old corporate world, would say that he did a hostile takeover of the Republican Party. He had been a Democrat, he'd been a Republican, had been an independent all over the place. And he saw the Republican Party as a weak party, in a sense, and he took it over, and it's made it into his own image. And now, it's, as far as I'm concerned, it's a misnomer to call it a Republican Party. It's really the party of Trump.
So that's a great lead into the next question, which is, where does the party as you know it, the party that you served for 17 years in Congress and believed in, where does the party go now after where we stand in 2020?
Well, traditional Republicans, and that's how I use the term as opposed to any other term that you can. I mean, I can only take myself. I mean, here I was. I represented a pretty solid Democratic district in Congress as a Republican. So I always had a lot of concerns for my reelection. And after 8 terms, I actually was defeated. But the fact of the matter is that district now, like so many in the entire state of Missouri, is bright red. It's all Republican. So things have changed. Donald Trump has turned the party upside down so that the so-called principles of free trade, of personal responsibility, all the things that he has come out against are no longer there. So I think traditional Republicans are kind of lost in the forest right now. They don't really know what to do. I personally voted a straight Democratic ticket this last time, and it's not unusual because the last two elections I've done the same thing. I don't think the Republican Party I think it's a party of extremists, and their views demographically, it's declining. And so I don't really see a strong future. Now, having said that, I was shocked, as they say, shocked, that they did so well on the down ballot races, like for Congress and Senate. We just didn't see it. I didn't see it. And I consider myself somebody who has a fairly good political antenna. But I did not see that the fact that the Democrats did not gain any of those Senate seats that they went after and practically lost the House in this election.
So as a political pundit, as someone with a good political antenna, take us through what you see as potential scenarios here coming the next 4 years. Now, Joe Biden's in office. We'll turn to him in a minute. But what happens? Where do we go from here on the other side, the ledger on the Republican side?
Well, I think a lot of it, Howard, has to do with what happens in Georgia on the 5th of January with those two open Senate, those two Senate seats are up for election. It seems to me that Donald Trump and his efforts to try to undermine the election returns and the outcome here with all of his false statements, misinformation, and lawsuits has really weakened the brand of Republicans in Georgia, so that he's given the two Democrats a really good chance of perhaps walking through that with a hard-fought race and becoming U.S. senators. That would give the majority to Joe Biden to have in both the House and the Senate. And I think in today's unfortunate polarized world of politics, you practically need to have both bodies, House and Senate, in order to govern. So if those Senate seats go Republican, then I think Mitch McConnell will be empowered to do what he tried to do to Barack Obama, and that was to make him a one-term president and to oppose him at all times.
You talked about how split our politics has become. It is traditional, or I think traditional, for a president to put at least one member of the opposing party somewhere in his cabinet. I remember Barack did that, I think at defense, actually. Do you see this happening in the Biden cabinet, and who might that potential Republican be?
Well, I think so, and I think he mentioned that during the campaign, and I think it would be wise for him to do that. I supported John Kasich, the former governor of Ohio, during the primary in 2016, and worked for him in four or five states until he had to withdraw. He certainly was somebody who would fill a couple of positions. I kind of thought it was going to be defense, but I see, at least in the media, that his name hasn't been mentioned for that or practically for any other position. But I think John Kasich is somebody who came out and supported Joe Biden during the general election. He made a speech at the convention. Of course, everything was done remote, but he did that. So I see him as being in a good position. Other than that, it's hard to calculate who he might get. It may be for a second tier position as opposed to a straightforward cabinet position.
Do you think John Kasich is sort of had his fill of this, or do you think he's going to take another shot at bringing things back to more to the center in the Republican Party?
Well, I personally don't think that he should, because I think, he's run several times and it hasn't worked out. I think this was his best shot. And again, I think John's smart enough to figure out that this is not, his Republican Party. It's totally different. Now, in Ohio, it may still be clinging. Mike DeWine, who I served with in the House, who's governor, has done, long distance standpoint, I'm observing this, he's done well in handling the pandemic. He congratulated Joe Biden immediately. So Mike is, he has a lot of character to him. And I think, in Ohio, perhaps there could be a future, but I don't think John Kasich wants to run for governor again. I'm sure he's eligible under Ohio law. So, I don't know what his future might be, but, There's plenty of other people who are, former Republicans. I mean, I kind of consider myself now an independent, simply because the Republican Party has moved so far to the extremes. You know, Ronald Reagan said that he left the Democratic Party. He didn't leave it. They left him. And that's kind of how I feel about the Republicans now.
Last question. In an effort to heal the country, to do the best you can in a bipartisan manner, what advice would you have for President Biden as to either what to do or what not to do?
Well, I think he has handled himself very well. I certainly am not in a position to advise the president-elect, but he's got to get this pandemic under control, and he has got to get the American people, the 70 million people who did not vote for him, to understand the science behind the reasons for a policy. And that policy is, as we all know, is to avoid crowds, wear a mask, social distance, and not just the opposite of what Donald Trump suggested that they all do. I think as Trump's days are numbered and he leaves the office, people will start following somebody else. But the fact is that we'll have a president for 4 years at least who has so many challenges facing him, perhaps only since FDR and the Great Depression and World War II. Does Joe Biden face. So the pandemic getting under control, getting people back to work by opening up the economy again, but you can't do that until everybody gets the vaccination or understands how to deal with the pandemic. And then he's got to restore our place in the world and foreign policy. And Joe has a great background in foreign policy, and I think he'll do a very good job, and I think he's going to have to mend all of our ties that have been broken with our allies and tell those who are adversaries that this is a new administration and it's not the Trump administration.
Tom, thanks so much for your time on this Saturday morning. Really appreciate it. And when we come back, the best social policy idea I have heard, at least in a long time, and one that will infuriate most of the WRVA listeners. You're listening to News Radio WRVA 1140 AM and 96.1 FM. I'm Howard Gutman, and this is As I See It.
This is As I See It on News Radio WRVA. Here is former U.S. Ambassador Howard Gutman.
Welcome back. And now the social policy issue that I think is the best idea I have heard in a long time. But if you are a WRVA conservative listener, it will likely infuriate you. Now let's start with where we begin. Our biggest failure as a country was making the coronavirus a political issue. Let's repeat that, worth repeating. Our biggest failure as a country was making the coronavirus a political issue, and there were four people to blame. There's Donald Trump, there's MSNBC, there's CNN, and there's Fox News. They turned the most deadly virus in any of our lifetimes, and in a very long time, they turned something that would paralyze our nation, paralyze the world, kill our friends and loved ones. They made it about politics. They made it about the success of the Trump administration, the failure of the Trump administration. They made it about entertainment, not with doctors teaching us about the virus and the facts and the science, but about the entertainment of the politics of the virus. And so an issue like, should Americans wear masks during a virus, became not a question of, do the masks protect to what extent? Do the masks impede to what extent? What are the negative consequences of wearing masks? It became about whether you are a Trump-fearing Republican or a Trump-opposing Democrat. So as the Trump-fearing Republicans went out and started coughing or yelling at people with no masks, the Democrats wore masks with anti-Trump slogans, and they put masks on their ears and their heads. And masks became a symbol about the political battle in this country. Masks became part of the referendum on Donald Trump. And now we are having a potentially bigger consequence of the failure of the country that made the virus a political issue. Because we are now making the vaccine the solution to the most deadly virus, the solution to the biggest threat to our economy, the solution to the biggest threat of our way of living, we are making that a political issue. Do I fear the virus? If I take the virus, the vaccine, aren't I admitting I fear the virus and I should have worn a mask? I'm much too macho. I shouldn't take the vaccine. Versus lectures about you're taking the vaccine. Now, it's important because I believe the vaccine will be out to people, most of us, by March. I know that's more aggressive than some, but I've just looked at the figures. I think we can all be vaccinated in March or April. We can have herd immunity. We can go back to life as we love it. Heck, I've been threatening to run naked through the closest Walmart just to hug everybody. That would be a really ungodly sight, so we should hope the vaccine's not that effective. But we have the solution at our fingertips, but we need herd immunity. We need people to take the vaccine. And since we've made it a political issue, there are those who say, I just won't do it. Well, at the same time, our economy, because of this virus, needs an economic stimulus. And as you know, the House and the Senate were arguing about the economic stimulus package. The Democrats wanted more. That became Nancy Pelosi. Once Nancy Pelosi wants A, the Republicans have to have anything but A. And on they go with their nonsense on both sides. And so we couldn't come up with an economic stimulus, and the restaurants near me closed. And the real estate that those restaurants in will be a problem. And the retail vendor and the people who spent their life building businesses are suffering, but we couldn't come up with the economic stimulus. So amidst this chaos, John Delaney is a guy I've met many times. He's a local in our area in Potomac, Maryland, was our congressman until he decided to run for president. And John is a smart guy, a successful businessman, an entrepreneur who doesn't talk about all his successes. He just shows you by his thoughts. John Delaney came out with the proposal that what we should do for the economic stimulus is pay people to take the vaccine. We solve two birds with one stone. You pay people to take the vaccine. We get our economic stimulus money out and we increase vaccine acceptance rates to where we get herd immunity. And if you are in the smaller fringe, you have a religious objection, you have a medical condition. If you're in the smaller fringe, you can't hurt the rest of us because we'll get to herd immunity. That's only requires 70-75%. We can get 10 or 15% of the people not taking it. But the difference between the people who say, no, never mind, I'm a Trump-fearing Republican, I don't want the vaccine, those people won't count. Now, there are objections immediately from WRVA, my dear friend John Reed. He had the instinctual reaction that all of you are going to have. First of all, we don't have the money. The last thing we need is to run up the deficit. All of a sudden, the Republicans are become deficit feared again now that Joe Biden's in and Donald Trump is out. It does not cost a penny. The Delaney proposal does not cost a penny. Because last time we just handed out the $1,200 to everybody. You didn't work, you didn't file a tax return, you still got $1,200. Now you'll get your $1,200 or $1,500, but it comes with a vaccine. So it doesn't cost us any more on the deficit side. On the medical side, plainly if someone is allergic to the vaccine or immunocompromised so they can't take a vaccine or a religious objector to their core that they can prove that it would offend their constitutional rights, they're entitled to the money, perhaps then, without getting the vaccine. But there is no serious medical community authority, no serious doctor who will tell you you are better off health-wise not taking the vaccine than taking the vaccine, or that we are better off health-wise or economically-wise as a nation if you don't take the vaccine than if you do. So John Delaney, a thinker well ahead of his time, has come up with an answer that I think is brilliant. If you disagree, follow me and tweet me at @TheHowardGutman. I look forward to seeing you next week. This is As I See It. You've been on News Radio WRVA 1140 AM and 96.1 FM. Have a great week.
Thanks for listening to As I See It with Howard Gutman. See you next Saturday morning at 10 for another edition of the show. For more info, log on to WRVA.com. News Radio, WRVA.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.